Welcome to NHL at the Rink, our weekly podcast covering the stories big and small of all 31 teams in the National Hockey League. I'm Dan Rosen, your host. We are recording this Wednesday morning, September 25th, and we've got a guest-laden show today, four in total, including an interview with Nashville Predators center Matt Duchene and a former NHL player turned survivor. But first, here are three things that have caught my attention as the preseason has rolled on here. Number one, Jack Hughes. This kid looks like the real deal. Breakaway goal against Henrik Lundqvist, smooth. The OT winner against the Boston Bruins in the preseason game. He just looks bigger than I thought he would. Very comfortable. Taylor Hall told me he's a stud. Hard to argue. Number two, like the trade between the Blues and the Hurricanes that we saw earlier this week. I think it makes sense for both sides. Justin Falk comes in. He establishes the right side of that defense for the St. Louis Blues. They also have Alex Pietrangelo and Colton Parayko. Sign him to a seven-year deal. I didn't think Carolina was going to re-sign Falk, so they get a top prospect in Dominic Bach and Joel Edmondson, who's a solid bottom pair defenseman for them. Like that trade. I think it fits for both teams. And number three, there's a new market for contracts for these restricted free agents. They're three-year contracts that we're seeing, with the third year being the most lucrative in actual salary earned. And that is significant because the third year of the three-year deal, that means that's the number that the team has to qualify the player at, and that's where he starts his next negotiation. So let's look at it. Matthew Tkachuk just signed with the Calgary Flames this morning. It's a $7 million AAV on a three-year deal. So it's a three-year contract, $21 million. He's making $9 million in the third year. $9 million is the starting point for his next contract negotiation. That's the carrot at the end of the deal. It helps out the Flames now. They can stay cap compliant. But Matthew Tkachuk looks at it and says, my next deal, I'm starting at $9 million, probably a lot higher. Same thing with Braden Point. We saw that earlier this week. $9 million at the end of his contract for that third year, $6.75 million average annual value of the deal, though, helps the Lightning now. We've seen it from a bunch of others, too. Zach Werenski, Charlie McAvoy, Brock Besser, and we'll probably, I think, see it from Mikko Rantanen and Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor. At least two of those three, or maybe all three, will get these similar type of contracts where the third year is the big money year. And we mentioned Braden Point, so that's a perfect segue to get to our first guest. Kaylee Chelios is a rising star in the media business. She's been with the Tampa Bay Lightning as their digital reporter, host for their website and Lightning Vision. And last week, she was named as an official member of their broadcast team. We got Kaylee right now. Kaylee, welcome in. Congratulations. So what are your responsibilities in your new radio gig with the Lightning?
Hi, Dan. Thank you. So I'm officially a member of the broadcast team. So it's great because now being a radio analyst is now my primary responsibility. I did it last season, just kind of on a trial run through some of the development camp streams, and then Dave Mishkin generously asked me to join him in the preseason, and it kind of stuck the rest of the year. I traveled to almost every game. So, you know, now I do it officially, and that's going to be my new title, is the radio analyst, and then I'm still able to do my digital reporting responsibilities as well, but that's secondary now to being an analyst, which is great.
So Lightning fans will hear you and see you everywhere, which is great.
They can't get away from
They can't get away. I mean, Kaylee and I know each other, and we talked about what would be your next step. I remember having a conversation with you in Tampa about what would be, and this is a terrific step for you. I think it's just fantastic. What intrigues you about being in the second chair next to Dave Mishkin and being the analyst and the one really taking a look at plays happening in the game? What's the intrigue for you there?
Yeah, I mean, I remember that conversation and when I asked if I could just ask you some questions very well. And yeah, I've always wanted to be more in the analyst role. I just think it's cool and it's what excites me. I like breaking down plays. I've watched all my brother's games growing up alongside my dad and his teammates and everything when we'd all go to games and play together. So I just loved, you know, learning the game on that end and trying to, you know, figure out what was right, what was the wrong play, who was out of position, just learning all the different tendencies and everything like that. So I just felt like I wanted to add more in addition to being a reporter. And I enjoy the reporting aspect so much, but I wanted to be able to do even more because I thought I could. And I couldn't quite figure out, you know, what kind of role I could fill in to do that when I had that conversation with you a couple of years back. So I know I wanted to do it in graduate school. There weren't very many women at that time in an analyst position on TV or you know, behind the scenes, I just hadn't met too many women yet, even though they were there. They were just trying to break through. And now we're seeing a lot more with Kendall Coyne. You know, she's officially covering the Sharks on NBC as an analyst, and it's pretty cool. So I really like breaking down the plays. I like being able to provide a narrative, and, you know, it's really different watching the game and then being able to take 6 or 7 seconds and be really concise and effective with, you know, describing what happened on the ice to fans over the radio. So I couldn't have asked for a better position to open up for me and give me an opportunity alongside Dave Mishkin. He's been an incredible mentor and taught me so much in such a short time already.
Yeah, he is terrific. I'm going to ask you to be a reporter and an analyst here. So let's go into the Lightning a little bit. Braden Point signs the contract, 3-year deal earlier this week. What do you think triggered the contract getting done with Braden Point? Was it more Braden? Was it the Lightning? What do you think it was that clinched it finally?
Well, I think it was tough. Again, hearing from what Julian had to say, it sounded like his agent, Braden's agent, and Julian, especially Braden's agent, was like, well, let's just wait to kind of see what the market is. I think there was no intention in getting a deal done any sooner than training camp. So I think they were just kind of waiting to see what the market was going to be like at that time. And given how high it was and some of these lucrative contracts we're seeing, I think Braden wants to be in Florida. He's always wanted to be in Tampa. It was just a matter of figuring out an exact number and getting it done. And they had said that, you know, he didn't want to miss any of the regular season games or anything like that. He's not healthy either, so there really wasn't an imminent rush, although they did say that his health, you know, didn't have anything to do with the fact that they, you know, didn't have it done before the start of training camp. However, I think that it obviously helped that he doesn't have to worry about missing too much competition because he's still rehabbing. But I mean, I don't think there was too much of a question. I mean, they had to get to the proper number, and he signed a bridge deal that's more than any other Lightning player has. When you look at all the players, there's a long list starting back to Steven Stamkos who have signed bridge deals that have worked out very well for them. So,
he'll be the Lightning's highest paid player if he continues down this path, you know, on his next contract. Yeah. There's no question. But you mentioned the surgery. You mentioned the injury, the hip surgery in the offseason. So he won't start the season. What is the timeline for Braden Point right now in terms of getting back on the ice with the team and finally getting into games? What are they looking at?
Yeah, so he'd been dealing with it for a while, actually, last season. Like he said, it was a wear and tear type thing that several other players, I'm sure, including Rick Ryan Callahan, had dealt with. But he's going to be joining the team this week. He was supposed to be here by Wednesday, but the team has a day off today. So we'll see if he joins them in a red non-contact jersey on Thursday for practice, the morning skate, ahead of the game against the Panthers. And then he's expected to be back, I think, for regular season games by the end of October. He's been skating for a while now with Barb Underhill back home, and he looks pretty good. He's in pain-free right now, which is good, and he's feeling great. So I think he'll be back sooner than later, but his timetable as of right now is he should be cleared to play in at least full contact by the end of October.
He is so good and so important for this team. Big picture, Kaylee, I wanted to ask you about this. Just a big picture look at the Lightning. It's going to happen. Wherever they go this season, they're going to get questions about what happened in the playoffs last season, getting swept by the Blue Jackets after their historic regular season. Is this team, you've been around them all camp now, you know them as well as anybody, is this team mentally prepared for that? Because that's going to be the mental test that they're facing.
I think so. I mean, it's been nonstop all summer for them. You know, every scrum, every interview that we've done, they've continued to be asked, you know, from our staff and employees at the Lightning, because it was such a hard blow for Lightning fans and the community. I think they're more than prepared, but they're also very ready to turn the page. I think being back at training camp has been great for them because they just want to move past it. They want to change the narrative. They don't want to look back and think about it, but I think it's good. I think it's going to be really interesting, the start of the season. We talked with Julian a little bit about the adversity they're facing. 6 of their first 7 are divisional opponents, all on the road. They have the big trip to Sweden coming in November, and historically teams have not played well when they've come back, with the exception of the Winnipeg Jets from these European Global Series games. So I think it's going to be a really interesting start. They talked about adversity and not seeing enough of it last season being a problem for both the coaches and the players, because they faced some of the hardest parts of their season in that 1 week of the playoffs, to injury and dealing with Columbus on the rise. So I think it's going to be a really interesting start to the season. We'll see if they can play with maybe a chip on their shoulder. And although they put the past behind them, you know, they know they have to get back on the horse and play through another 82-game season with the expectations of winning the Cup again. I think it's a lot.
And I think that's the hardest thing is that they have to play 82 games just to get back to it. And they touched on it last year, too, when they got out, when they were knocked out. You touched on the division opponents. Two more for you. One, do you think it'll be harder for them to win the division this season? The division got better, it looks like, on paper. Do you think the Lightning are going to have a more difficult time to finish first? It was easy last year.
Yeah, I mean, last year they made it look easy with 62 wins. I mean, that was pretty incredible watching them play all season long. It was just like record after record was shattered, the individual awards and everything given out by the end of the season. Vezina, Hart, Ted Lindsay, you know, John Cooper for the Jack Adams. I mean, they've got all the individual awards now. They're still missing that big trophy. And I think that the division looks really good. The Panthers, I'm very intrigued about. They'll see them 5 times, 3 in the preseason, 2 in the regular coming up. And they look really, really good. I mean, they had the offensive ability in those top 2 lines and Barkov leading the way. And now they've got the goaltender they want and an extremely well-respected coach. So we'll see if they can finally maybe buy in and adjust a lot quicker to some of the new defensive schemes and systems, because historically, as we've seen, they haven't been able to do that the first half of the season, and Bobrovsky will have to prove that he can be the goaltender they signed him for, through a full 82-game season. So I think it's going to be interesting. Montreal looks like they've made some really good adjustments as well, and Toronto, of course, obviously signing Marner, and they've got a lot to play for this season, just given their cap situation for years to come. So I think it's going to be competitive. It's definitely not going to be easy. And I don't know that they can repeat a 62-win season again, but maybe a little bit of adversity and a tough start to the season will be a good thing. It might not be. So we'll have only time will tell.
No, I think you're right. I think adversity will be a good thing. They'll be interesting to watch. Kaylee, everybody's going to be listening and watching you too. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Kaylee is terrific, and I think she's going to nail this job as a radio broadcaster for the Lightning. She does a terrific job on the digital side, and congratulations to her. She also brought up some really good points on the interview, one about Braden Point and the contract and the injury and how, you know, they're waiting to get him ready to go, and it'll be probably late October, and also just about the Lightning and that mental state that this team has got to be in this season. I agree with her. They're going to face a lot of questions about what happened last season, and one of the guys that beat them last season was a guy we sat down with at the Player Media Tour a couple of weeks ago in Chicago. He was with the Columbus Blue Jackets then. Matt Duchene has since signed a 7-year, $56 million contract with the Nashville Predators. Signed it on July 1st, a country music fan living in Music City. But that is not the biggest reason that Duchene chose Nashville. He discussed that and more when we sat down with him in Chicago. Matt, you knew the UFA experience was coming. And what was it like for you to go through it?
Oh, it was a lot of things. I think it was stressful. It was exciting. It was a lot. But at the end of the day, we're very, very excited where we're at. And I think it's a place that we've seen. You know, if you told me a few years back that that's where we're going to end up, I definitely wouldn't have been surprised. So at the end of the day, that's where our hearts were once it came time to make that decision. And I'm very grateful for the stops I've had along the way.
Why was Nashville the right fit for you? What about that market? Everybody was always looking and saying, well, Duchene's going to end up in Nashville. Because, you know, that's the perfect fit. Why? What is it about Nashville that's the perfect fit?
I think from the outside, people looking in, I think they can see that I'm a pretty, heart-on-my-sleeve type person. And I'm very passionate about the things I love. And country music is one of them. I think people put that together. That was not why we ended up in Nashville. That's a great perk. I have a lot of friends in the music industry, the people I've got to know over the years. And but at the same time, for us, it was a team that I've liked from afar for a while, and I think they're right there. And hopefully, you know, I can come in and help out. And the other part is, so that the hockey part was number one. I mean, I only get to do this for so long, and when I'm done playing, I can live wherever I want, right?
Right.
But the hockey part number one, and then outside of that, for my wife and I grew up in a small town in Ontario. You know, that kind of country lifestyle is what I grew up with. My wife was the same, and outside of Denver, she grew up in a small town outside of Denver. And if you kind of mix them together, you get Nashville. So it's somewhere that we with our little guy, I think once he came into the picture, it changed things too for me, because I think I really, you know, was looking at where I wanted to bring him up. And there's a lot of great places in the league, and that's what made the decision hard at the end of the day, is picking the right spot for you want to encompass everything, I think, in your decision. I truly believe Nashville does that for us.
So do you see, I mean, you haven't even lived there long enough to play a single game yet, but as we talk here, but the way you're describing it, where your wife is from, where you're from, is, and you say Nashville's a happy medium, is Nashville a place where you can settle for when you're done too?
I think that's, as of right now, that's the goal. I could also see us maybe going back to Denver at some point, but I think right now, yeah, I mean, that's our plans. I mean, that's, and I think at this age, that's this stage of my life, I think, you know, I'm not 23 years old and hockey's all I've got, other than, you know, my parents and my buddies, and you're not making decisions for them at that point. Now it's like, I've been married for a couple of years. I've got a little guy. I mean, we're obviously going to try and expand our family.
He's going to grow.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some of the values of down there really reflect, you know, how I grew up. And I think obviously he's going to have to live in a different area. I can't bring him up in Halliburton, like, you know, and, I think it just reflects kind of who we are as people, and that everyone's so nice. That kind of Southern hospitality is very similar to what you get in Canada, with everyone being so nice. So I think it's a great and polite and good way to, you know, we're Christian as well. So I think it's a great place for that. A lot of people have that same belief, and I just think there's a lot of things that align with who my wife and I are as people.
I wondered, though, having covered you guys in the playoffs and talking to you in the playoffs when you were with Columbus, how close Columbus would come to being the spot, because I know you liked it.
Yeah, I did.
You did like it there. Yep. How close was Columbus? Was that part of what made it a hard decision?
Yeah, I'm not really going to go into how close or how not close, because I would get into the specifics, but no, Columbus was a team that we very much considered. I loved the guys there. I mean, that was the same with Ottawa. I mean, it was the same in Ottawa too. The two of the best group of guys I've ever played with. When I got into Columbus, I mean, there was a lot of pressure on that team, especially when Yarmo did what he did, and in terms of, you know, going all in for it. And I still think that, you know, that Boston series was tough. I think it could have gone either way, and you know, we could have ended up in game seven in the finals just as easily. So I think it was a great experience. I've never seen a crowd like the Columbus crowd.
That was nuts.
That was insane.
I remember that.
And
yeah,
obviously, like me saying that, like, you know, people would be like, oh, he's biased. I didn't have a predisposition bias, because I was so new, and it just blew me away. So I'm excited now to go to Nashville, because everyone knows about their crowd, and I know it can be, you know.
I'll tell you, the crowd during the Stanley Cup final when the Predators were
I can't even imagine.
Was
yeah.
insane.
Yeah,
I mean,
probably
the
loudest you've ever
it
heard.
It feels like, I can imagine as a player, it would feel like they were on top of you.
Yeah, the building. I mean, everyone on the ends, everyone. One of the things I always loved about playing there was the atmosphere, but also the crowd in the corners. It feels like they're right on top of you. It's like, it's pretty neat. It's always been one of my favorite places to play, so I'm hoping I like it just as much on the home side of things.
Well, now there's a little more pressure on the home side of things.
Yeah, exactly.
This does, though, signing that contract in Nashville, landing there, getting there, moving. Have you found a place to live?
Yeah, we have, yeah.
Okay. So moving there, getting settled, it ends 2 years of weird, doesn't it?
Yes,
I mean,
does.
I think of the end in Colorado was strange.
Very strange.
Then you go to Ottawa. Your first game is against Colorado.
Yeah.
In Stockholm.
Yeah.
That's strange.
Then you remember my first game with Columbus?
Your first game with Columbus was against Ottawa, am I correct?
I've got to be the only guy in sports history, right?
Yeah.
Twice get traded.
Has to be.
It's really funny. When Pierre Dorion called me the first time after I got traded, and we were laughing about how it all happened. And it was funny because I called it before the game because I knew it was close. And my agent told me what time some people were talking. And I'm like, well, we play at that time. So I'm kind of like, and I still remember looking back and seeing our trainer get the kind of the radio to bring me off the ice. But I called, when Pierre called me, I said to him, Pierre, I said, I don't know why, but weird things follow me around. And I said, as you just saw. So I said, just be prepared for that a little bit, right?
Weird.
So, and I mean, I don't know what it is. My wife is always like, what is going on?
I remember when you walked off the ice during a TV timeout at Barclays Center. You were on another team.
Yeah, it wasn't even a TV timeout. It was injury timeout. Cuomo got hit in the head with the puck.
That's correct.
And they're like, hey, just follow him off. And of course, I'm in one of the only rinks that you can't just walk down the tunnel. Nope, no one even noticed it, right? So yeah. I sat there for like 7 minutes before I got off.
And you knew.
I knew at that point, yeah. So I looked up at our coach at the time. He just gave me a nod like that. And I was just like, okay. So, I'm toying with writing a book at the end of my career. Hopefully there's a happy ending to all of this. And, we win a cup in Nashville and
right. You
ride off into the sunset. But it's been crazy.
It's two years of weird. I mean, yep, this is some totally strange stuff. So yep. Do you feel like it's finally behind you?
I definitely don't seek it out and I definitely don't want it. But hopefully it's good drama now and not weird or just obscure stuff like that.
Wanted to get into some of the other things, some more personal stuff. So what are so fans can get to know you on a different level, yep, too. What are some of your likes and dislikes?
I think most people know because I'm pretty public with it. Number one, my new favorite thing is being a dad. That is the coolest thing in the world. My little guy is, I'm so proud of him. He smiles and I'm proud of him. He grabs something with his hand. It's unbelievable. It's like nothing I've ever experienced.
How old is he now?
He's going to be 8 months on the 9th. So
8 months on September 9th.
He actually started crawling yesterday while I was in the air. I missed him by just hours. So
did you get a video?
My wife got a video. Yeah. Okay. So pretty cool. So that's the first thing. Other than that, fishing, playing music, listening to music, country music. It's all country music for me. I mean, that's, I think, why people always pointed me to going to Nashville. So definitely a nice perk to have in town.
What do you play?
Guitar.
Guitar.
Yeah. Very, very basic. I mean, I can play at the campfire and you can tell me to play something. I'll look it up on my phone and I'll play it. I can kind of do that. Yeah. So, I've played with some local bands every now and then. They have me come sit in and play like just some covers and stuff in town, like in my hometown. So I've played with some guys. I played at the All-Star game with Lee Bryce in Nashville a couple of years ago. Very basic. I'm going to take some lessons when I get down there. So I'm excited for that. Like I said, fishing. I actually just bought a wake surf boat last summer, so I've tried to get better at that and get into that. I love it. It's so fun.
Yeah.
Saturdays, all my friends come over. We go out and That's surf great. All day. So just being at the lake, lake life, Lake Ontario lake life.
Canadian lake life.
That's
right?
The best. There's nothing better. My wife's from Denver. She had barely seen water in her whole life, and her favorite place on earth is Haliburton, Ontario, which is really cool.
Thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank you.
It.
Appreciate it.
Always enjoy talking to Matt Duchene. I think he's a terrific interview. He's open. He's honest. I really like what he said about perspective, that he's making decisions now for a family, including his son, Bo, and that he thinks Nashville could be home for good when he's done playing. I also really like Duchene's story and how signing with Nashville sort of ends that 2 years of weird, of nuttiness that we talked about in the interview. And I was with him when he was traded from Colorado to Ottawa. We rode the freight elevator up together. I was interviewing him at Barclays Center as he was going up the freight elevator to go to a car that was going to take him to Ottawa. He thought it was taking him to a team that was a Stanley Cup contender that would win. That didn't happen. Thought it would be the same in Columbus. That didn't happen, though they got one step closer, and now he thinks it can happen in Nashville. You know what? That could be the perfect fit. We're certainly going to be keeping our eye on the Predators and him throughout the entire season. Transitioning now to something a little bit out of the box here for us on NHL at the Rink. Tom Laidlaw was a defenseman in the National Hockey League from 1980 to 90, played for the Rangers and the Kings, and now he is a contestant on the 39th season of the show Survivor. First episode airs Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS. And Tom, thanks for doing this. And this is obviously unique. So I've got to ask, let's get right to it. How does a former NHL defenseman become a contestant on Survivor? Or maybe a better question is, why?
Well, first of all, great to be on with you. I love what you're doing on TV. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
It's funny you asked the question. I think I kind of asked myself the question when we first got dropped off on the island to play the game. I was like, wow, I'm actually doing this. It all started probably a couple of years ago. I was asked to potentially be on Amazing Race. The concept was that I was going to be on with another former player that I was, played with, he was friends with. And we really couldn't find anybody that fit. Either somebody didn't have a passport or they couldn't get the time or they weren't in shape or whatever to do it. And then it shifted to Survivor. And it really, my business now, I do a lot of motivational speaking and podcasts. There's a book coming out, and it's all about, devotion and discipline and dedication and integrity. And know, some of those things apply to Survivor, but the integrity thing certainly didn't apply to Survivor at all. So I had to really get my head around the fact that, okay, that's, you know, if you have to mislead people or red lie to them, that's the game. That's really not who I am. And once I, you know, figured out, okay, that's fine, I can handle that, we dove in head first and gave it a shot. And it was a blast. The whole process, just trying to get on the show and ultimately getting on the show, it was like you said, it's unique. And especially for me, I turned 61 when I was out there on the island, and I didn't want to play like an old man. I wanted to play like a player, and I've kept myself in great shape and everything, but still mentally, you know, you got to get yourself ready to go. And I felt like I did that. So the whole process going into it, training for it and everything, was a lot of fun.
Bigger challenge for you, competing on Survivor at 61 years old or trying to survive and extend your National Hockey League career when you get into your 30s?
Yeah. Wow, that's a great one. You know what's funny? That's a fantastic question, actually, because I think I was more prepared for the Survivor experience than I was for the end of my career. I think all along, to me, I think a lot of players, when they play, you have to have a certain level of this stubbornness that, I can do it. I don't care what the odds are, you know, just to make it to the NHL, right? You know, you have to, all these people are saying, well, yeah, sure, you want to make it, but the odds are against you, you make it. And, you know, I was never that really talented a player. I just had to show up all the time and be that captain or assistant captain. So I kind of had this tough, you know, farm boy mentality that, you know, just keep grinding it out all the time. Don't ever get on the training table because, you know, that's a sign of weakness and all those things. And at the end of my career, you know, my back started giving out. All those things that made me a player kind of hurt me because I had the stubbornness. I wasn't going to get on the training table. That's the worst thing, right? Just deal with it. Suck it up. So I looking back at it, I certainly would have said, listen, you need to learn things. I watch other players like Zdeno Chara now getting older, and he changes his training methods and everything so he can continue to play in the NHL. And so I look back and I wish I had been like that when I played. So now being older at 60 and 61 going on Survivor, I felt like I was more prepared for the mental part of it. You know, to me, I really learned how much more your mind controls your body and everything. So I was much more prepared to get out there and play the game.
I've been trying to think of what parallels we can draw between being a contestant on Survivor and being a National Hockey League player. It's not easy, but I wonder, is being a contestant on Survivor anything like playing overtime hockey in the playoffs, where you win or you go home?
Yeah. Well, and part of it is, too, yeah, that's a very good point for you, Dan. I guess the additional part of that, too, is that, like, even, and I guess it compares to playing the game, too, even if you are the best player out there, or if you're feeling you're doing everything right, that could actually be the reason that you get voted off, you know, because you put your target now because you're such a good player. So I guess it compares to, you know, when you're playing on a team and you're playing in an overtime game, you could be playing a fantastic game and doing everything you need to do, but just the puck doesn't bounce your way or whatever happens and the other team scores and it's all over with. And that is the same way with Survivor. If somebody decides that they want to get you out for some reason, they can rally enough votes against you, then you're getting voted out. It doesn't matter really if you're playing the best game or not.
Another bigger challenge question for you. I want to ask you this one. Chasing Mario Lemieux around the ice or sleeping on bamboo outdoors in the rain in Fiji when you know your fellow contestants are plotting against you? What's harder?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I always tried to stay in front of Mario.
There you go.
But, yeah. You know, it was somewhat easier back when I played, too, because we could hook and hold all the time, too. So
can't do that now,
though. That doesn't mean you stop them, but it was easier.
What was that like, though, sleeping outdoors in Fiji? I mean, in the bamboo and trying to just adjust your life to live in these elements?
You know what? It's going to sound strange, but you really just got used to it. And it is strange for me to even say it. Even the lack of food, you know, I monitor all my intake and my calories and everything now, and I usually bring in somewhere between 3,000 and 3,500 calories a day. But out there, with rice and coconuts, I'm told it was like around 300 calories.
My
a day.
Goodness,
so
yeah.
You're constantly losing weight, you don't have the energy level, but all that stuff, like even like right sleeping on the bamboo. Is that bamboo? I hated. I mean, the rain in the middle of the night was the worst part, too, because it's just annoying. It was never really that rainy for us that we got soaked, but it's just annoying. You can't sleep. So those things were annoying, but man, I got to tell you, like, you get used to those things. Like, you get used to not eating. You're not brushing your teeth. It's funny the things you get used to, that you're filthy dirty all the time. But you get into game mode, and you're really playing the game 24/7, because even in the middle of the night, people are getting up. Maybe they're looking for idols, or they're planning a strategy. And you better be constantly aware of what's going on, or you're going to lose out. So it was a constant. The game on Survivor, dealing with all that stuff was tougher. I would say that was tougher than dealing with Marilyn Lemieux.
Was that the hardest part about it? Just that constant 24/7, you had to be on. Even in your sleep, you had to be on.
Yeah. But you know what, though, Dan? I hear you say, like, tough, but honestly, it was a blast playing.
Fun.
I know it was like, yeah, it was like that whole strategy part, that whole, like, constantly being on guard, knowing that, like, if you go into it prepared, knowing that somebody's going to be, people are saying things to you, they're your buddy, they're your pal, or whatever like that, but don't trust them. Like, you know, like, once you get in the mindset, it was actually kind of fun. And we had a great group on our tribe, too, that were, like, funny. Like, we had some fun times, and we all kind of understood, okay, we're having fun together, but, yeah, we are all planning to, you know, plotting to stab each other in the back, right? So it's kind of a weird thing, but, you know, it was that part was fun.
How did your training for this compare to your training as a hockey player?
Yeah. Well, for me, it was the biggest part was the mental part. You know, I think we all agree that, like, with sports and in life, like, it's like in sports particular, it's like probably 70-80% mental, right? We always talk about that all the time, but we tend to train our bodies more than we train our minds. And so I had a friend of mine is a really good trainer, and he's really into the mental part of training, like, you know, not just the physical, but how you prepare yourself to train and what you get from it mentally. And he would do things with me, so I would, he'd give me a poem, and I'd memorize the poem, be able to recite the poem perfectly, and then he would do something to elevate my heart rate. He would make me mad, have me ride a bike, whatever it is, and then I'd have to go back and recite the poem again. And inevitably, I couldn't remember all the poem once my heart rate got elevated. And it was at first, it was like a shock just to understand that that's the way I reacted to my heart rate being elevated. And then it's, okay, what do we do about it? So I had to practice what I needed, figure out what worked for me, not necessarily what worked for Dan Rosen or somebody else, to slow my heart rate down and be able to think clearly. And mine was to just, like, literally take a, like, a big, deep breath, like, make my body, like, a big motion of taking a deep breath. So what, and then I did that over and over, and I could, you know, get to the point where I could now recite the poem again and control my breathing and all that stuff. So that was really interesting, just that process of training for it. And it's funny, I got out there on the island, I can't tell too much, but
at first,
I forgot about that. I got a little too excited, the adrenaline got pumped too much, but then I settled myself down and remembered my training, and it helped me a lot.
That's a fascinating way to train yourself, to mentally train yourself, what is the ultimate grind? I mean, really, this is a grind, you know?
Yeah, you know, and looking back at it, Dan, that's something that I would, with my career, like, I think for players now, I think a lot of players do similar kind of stuff, but for me to look back at my career, I wish I knew all that stuff back then. You know, that was, you know, it was the 80s, and it was just like, it was hard, you know, play harder, and, you know, and just if I had to control myself, you know, you get in the middle of a big game, and you're tired at the end, and you got to control yourself. I would rather have, you know, known that stuff now, how to control my breathing and my mind.
Before we let you go, we do have to ask you a hockey question, though. The Rangers, your former team, just down the road from where you are in Connecticut, what do you think about the Rangers right now, this remake of the Rangers, getting Panarin, Trouba, Fox, Kako, the rebuild of the Rangers?
Well, it's gone a lot faster than I think anybody thought was going to happen. But the biggest thing, to me, the biggest addition they've made is their coach, and Coach Quinn. We belong to the same gym, and I saw him probably about 2 weeks ago, and I told him this, too. I said, I had worked for 4 years here with the Rangers, and, you know, during that 4 years, I wouldn't tell you even that remotely that I love the guy at all. In fact, sometimes I hated him because he was constantly pushing you to get the most you could out of yourself. And later on in life now, I still think about the things that Herb did for me. And I really, you know, we've lost him now, but I love the guy for what he did for me. You know, he would talk about, you know, things like passes come from the heart. You know, and what he meant was literally, you know, pass the puck, you know, put your heart into it, make it happen. But I really think that he was passing along kind of a life lesson, too, that, you know, get the most out of it. You're going to, whatever you do in your life, get the most out of it. And that's what I watched Coach Quinn do with his players. Like when I saw him last year put people up in the press box, you know, he was sending the message that is not good enough. Your effort isn't good enough. Your conditioning isn't good enough. But I thought he always did it in a way that was kind of strange, but kind of supportive. Like he was, you know, he's sending a message, but he's also saying, listen, you're a great player, but we need more out of you. And I think, to me, that's one of the biggest things that this, the culture for the Rangers that they've got going now with those great young players that you mentioned, is one of the biggest reasons I think they should make the playoffs this year.
A lot of people are watching them. They'll be watching you too, Tom. Thank you so much for doing this. Survivor, the 39th season airs. The first episode airs Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern on CBS. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Great, Dan. Thank you.
Unbelievable stuff from Tom. Just a terrific guest. That dude's a man. I'll tell you what, he could do a lot of things. He's 61 years old and he's doing all that. And I also really enjoyed what he talked about with the Rangers, the hockey perspective, mentioning that he goes to the same gym as David Quinn. He's spoken to David Quinn, and the anecdote about Herb Brooks, I thought that was excellent stuff. So great stuff from Tom. Before we get to our final guest, I wanted to answer a question that I got on Twitter. Now, every week I do a mailbag for NHL.com called Over the Boards. I get questions on Twitter. Can't get to them all. One that I wasn't able to get to this week that did catch my eye, though. What team do you see being this year's New York Islanders? Meaning a team that everybody thinks is going to be bad, but they end up being good. I think it's a great question. My answer is the Columbus Blue Jackets. I know they lost a lot, but they have a lot of high-end players still. I'm as guilty as anybody in thinking that the Blue Jackets are going to regress. They're going to take a step back. I didn't even pick them to make the playoffs. We just did our predictions for NHL.com, sent them in. They haven't run yet. But I did not put them in the playoffs. But they won't be that bad. A lot of people are picking them to be bottom in the Metropolitan Division. I don't see that happening. They won't be close to bad. They'll be right in the mix as long as their goaltending holds up. That's the biggest question. Jonas Korpisalo, Elvis Merzlikins, can those guys who have no experience as a number one really hold up? But I think Seth Jones will be in the Norris discussion. I expect a big year out of Pierre-Luc Dubois. There's a lot of talent in Columbus, even though Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky are gone. And that chip they have on their shoulder is legit. They'll use that, the doubters like me, as motivation. But a team I am doubting this year is the Winnipeg Jets. And that's where we go for our final guest. My colleague at NHL.com, Tim Campbell. He covers the Jets, the Oilers, all of Western Canada, really all the NHL for us. Tim, thanks for joining us. And I got to start with the obvious, Tim. What is the latest on Dustin Byfuglien?
Well, Dan, there hasn't been much official at all from the team. And so we are left with some amount of speculation. There's been some reporting that Dustin is contemplating his future, and that includes retirement. And I'm led to believe that's accurate. Last season took a big toll on Dustin. I am told that his concussion and his two ankle injuries that limited him to 42 regular season games really weighed on him. It took a lot of the fun out of the game for Dustin. And if you know anything at all about Dustin Byfuglien, he's not only a unique hockey player in that he's a monster of a man who can move around the ice very well. He's got soft hands, a great hockey brain, and when he gets in your way, you should run for cover. And there are a number of NHL players that can attest to that. Mark Stone is one of them. I recall a horrific hit here in Winnipeg a couple years ago, and it's amazing Mark Stone is still playing. So Dustin, he just has lost, I think, some of the buzz, and he's trying to reevaluate how much he wants to do this anymore. I mean, that's what I'm hearing. Maybe he just needs a short break to sort of revamp his enthusiasm. I don't really know how this is going to turn out, but to me, the longer it goes, probably the worst the news is going to turn out for the Jets, that missing an impact player like this is going to have a big impact on their lineup, and I don't think it's going to be positive.
Do you think this could be a situation where Buff carries this into the regular season, the uncertainty, and maybe we don't see him until December or January if he's ready to return?
And I think that's a distinct possibility that, you know, he maybe believes he needs to heal up a little more. Again, I'm just kind of trying to put myself in his shoes, you know, knowing how much fun is important to him in the game. You might sort of laugh at that if you're an NHL fan and you think it's kind of all business and all serious. But Dustin Byfuglien, he's such a character off the ice, and I really, really believe that fun is as much as is important to him as his contract or, you know, any other a number of things that are important to NHL players. He's a cantankerous. He's got a wicked sense of humor. He doesn't actually like to do interviews very much, but he's been known in interviews to, you know, drop the odd four-letter word into
yes,
it.
Yes, I've heard that, yes.
So that, you know, radio and television, especially interviews, are kind of ruined. He loves to do stuff like that, practical jokes with his teammates. He's known for people behind the scenes that I know that do know him very well. They cannot believe what a character he is. So we don't seem to get very much of that in public. So, you know, if some of that joy, I guess, of of playing hockey and being in the NHL is gone for him, you could see why he might be reevaluating things.
And this really couldn't come at a worse time for the Jets, right, Tim? I mean, you've got the contract situations, which we'll get to next with Laine and with Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor. You've got a D that, you know, lost half their blue line, the team that lost half their blue line with Jacob Trouba, Ben Chiarot, and Tyler Myers leaving, and now Dustin Byfuglien potentially too. It couldn't come at a worse time.
I agree with you. I can't even compare it to anything. I was talking with a person from another NHL organization about 3 weeks ago. We were talking about, you know, the Jets defense, as you mentioned, Jacob Trouba, Tyler Myers, Ben Chiarot, all gone to other teams now. And now I've had this conversation with that same person again just recently, who said to me, wow, if Dustin Byfuglien doesn't come back, has there ever been a team in the NHL that's gone from one season to the next having lost four of its top five defensemen? And that's a question I have no answer for.
I don't know.
I wouldn't even actually know how to do the homework, I guess, on that. It puts the Jets in a really precarious situation. I know they really like some of their young players and their developing players coming up, but I don't think any genius GM could envision, you know, putting four sort of new young faces into his lineup just because he felt they were good at one particular time. I mean, you're always going to gradually bring in prospects and give them a little more rope and, you know, those kinds of development things. But just sort of plopping four out and bringing in, you know, four of your top five that knew the next season and mostly young players, I think it's unprecedented.
Yeah, it's very hard to deal with, obviously. Let's talk about some more positive news with the Winnipeg Jets. I joke, obviously. Any movement on the contract situations with Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor? I mean, we've now seen this, the three-year deal with restricted free agents has become a thing. You know, Braden Point, Charlie McAvoy, Zach Werenski, Brock Besser, now Matthew Tkachuk, where the third year becomes the bigger payday in actual salary. You think, you know, will this open it up for Laine and Connor too?
I think this probably helps the Patrick Laine negotiations. Again, I'm just guessing here,
sure,
based on what's happened and what we've heard that Laine's camp is looking for. I could see now a path to a contract for Patrick Laine, probably following this template of 3 years. Work out the dollars, probably have some kind of, you know, escalating salary to arrive at an AAV somewhere around what Besser and or Matthew Tkachuk have got, approaching probably $7 million. I can see that being the path to a deal for Patrick Laine. And Kyle Connor, I don't know, I keep hearing that he would rather have the term. And so that they, you know, they're probably exploring something longer than this. And I have a feeling they'll both come up with a solution. I just can't see either of these players for the Jets being militant enough or being, you know, demanding enough that they're going to sit out games in October, the real games in the regular season. I don't think either player is all that interested. Obviously, they want to get a fair deal, but I can't really see it going beyond next week.
So you think I'll see them at Madison Square Garden when the Jets play the Rangers next week?
Well, I do. I would put it in, you know, better chance than not. You know, the other thing is, I don't want to put words and thoughts in the players' mouths, but I'm sure they realize what's happening with their team. And, you know, I don't think the Jets are a team that want to get off to a terrible start here. They've already got some challenges for this regular season. I don't really think they're enthusiastic about getting behind the eight ball, you know, in October when it might be avoided.
Not in that division. You can't do it in that division.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, then that's just another
Central's loaded
factors here with Winnipeg, right?
Yeah. They start out with four of their first five games on the road to the Jets. I mean, this is not an easy situation for the Winnipeg Jets. But let's bounce to another team that you cover closely. I think you're heading to Edmonton next week, right? Let's touch on the Oilers. Connor McDavid plays nearly 20 minutes in his preseason debut Tuesday night. Do you think there's any other hurdles that he has to clear to be ready to go to start the season on time? Is that knee okay?
Well, I'm not sitting in the medical meetings with, you know, the doctors.
Nor am I.
From what we can see from the outside, I mean, they have played this very smart, very cautious, the Oilers and Connor. I think they've done everything right since this accident happened. And in the game on April 9th, I believe it was. They've been cautious. They've been thorough. They've, you know, made sure Connor's feeling right. They haven't taken any risks along the way here with his rehab and his training and his practicing and his skating. So the fact that he went into a game on Tuesday night, it's got to be brilliant news for the Oilers, and it looks like he's come out unscathed. And I'm already looking forward to seeing him next Wednesday against Vancouver. He'll have that fire, as he always does, no matter what the situation. And, you know, he makes the Oilers such a better team. You know, I can't even put a number on it. It's multiples when he's in there and he's got the taste in his mouth. The Oilers, you know, will at least have a chance.
Can their goaltending give them a chance to be a legitimate playoff contender? They got Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen. What do you think, Tim? I think
I
you just said it all right
I
there.
I don't have them in the playoffs. It was a big sigh, I know.
Yeah.
It doesn't probably go well with podcasts.
No, but it described the answer we're about to get, I think.
I don't have them in among my teams picked to be in the playoffs, but I'll say this. I have a pretty high regard for Mike Smith. I know he's got a lot of miles on him, and I know there are so many skeptics out there about his goaltending, but I really like the sign he gave last season in Calgary. He struggled, as he often has in his past, but last year's trajectory was, to me, kind of different than his recent past, where he got a whole lot better in the second half, and he was their best player in the playoffs. I know they went out early, but if, you know, it would have looked a whole lot worse if Mike Smith not stood on his head in the
100%.
One round of playoffs they had. So he went out probably on a really good note with optimism, and I have a feeling that shows you he's not only got the fire, but he can still stop the puck under pressure. What Edmonton's going to need is probably some health with their blue line. You know, they're going to try to bring in a new defenseman or two, whether it's Joel Person or Ethan Bear or somewhere down the line here, Seth Jones' brother, Caleb Jones, and or Evan Bouchard, a really, really fine prospect Edmonton has. They're going to need some help with their blue line, people like Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larson and Darnell Nurse. They need some help from those guys, and they're going to need good timing as they try to rotate between Koskinen and Smith. What they don't need, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is what they don't need is for Smith and Koskinen to be sour for the same 2 weeks at any point in the season, because two or three bad weeks will put the Oilers, you know, behind the eight ball again, and it's a position they're all too familiar with. They're going to need good timing with their good goaltending this year, because I'm sure they're going to get some of it.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I don't think the Oilers can survive poor goaltending at any point. Tim, this was great. Covered the Jets, covered the Oilers. Appreciate it. Looking forward to the start of the season. Thanks for doing this, Tim.
No trouble, Dan. Let's do it again.
So there you have it from Tim Campbell, and you can follow him on Twitter at TimNHL. He and I are in agreement. We're both worried about the Winnipeg Jets and what's going to happen there, especially with the Dustin Byfuglien situation. So we got to wait and see on that. And that really does it for this episode of NHL at the Rink. Thanks to our guests, Kaylee Chelios, Matt Duchesne, Tom Laidlaw, Tim Campbell. Be sure to follow the other podcasts on the NHL Podcast Network. You got Executive Suite with Deb Placey, Fantasy on Ice with Pete Jensen and Rob Reese. Regular season opens next week, and that's when we'll have our next podcast. Until then, I'm Dan Rosen for NHL at the Rink.